The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This morning we have Niall Brennan in the studio. He is the Chief Data Officer, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. We call it CMS. And he has thrown himself into the battle. It's like there's a big battle going out there. He throws himself right in the middle of the big data battle. And not only that, it's in a big data battle involved with medical and medicine, medical terms. And he's either real brave or real silly. I don't know which one it is. We're going to find out more about his background and how he wound up getting in this strange, strange position. Now, tell us about your background and your accent and how you wound up working here, please.
Thanks, John. It's a pleasure to be back. So, I've been Chief Data Officer at CMS since November. Been a very exciting role, been at the agency a little bit longer than that, 5 years. I guess I've been a bit of a data geek my entire professional life. I won a scholarship to Georgetown University back in the 90s to do a master's in public policy. And that's why I came to the States and came to DC and kind of meandered my way around a number of extremely high-quality data-driven organizations, think tanks like the Urban Institute and Brookings, congressional agencies like the Congressional Budget Office and the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, and ended up at CMS 5 years ago. So I had a very good, strong grounding in the fundamentals of data and data analytics.
So did you pick them or did they pick you?
They picked me.
Wow.
It was mutual.
Did you know what was going to happen? Did you know that this is going to be like the battle of the century? I mean, you can tell your grandkids, yeah, I remember.
It was love at first sight. It was a very exciting time to join the agency, obviously, right after the passage of the Affordable Care Act and, you know, with data being, you know, kind of front and center and the agency coming to the realization that data was no longer a byproduct of their operations, but really a core function that was essential to, achieve the types of changes that we were looking for.
I wonder if they foresaw the battle and said, hey, we got to get some smart people on staff, drag this guy in, and we'll put him on the front lines. I mean, did they? Because I remember distinctly doing interviews with people from HHS back in those years. No one anticipated what was going to happen. I mean, no one anticipated everything, the battles, the fights, the mobile. It's all new.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was largely, serendipitous when I got there. It was very clear, again, that data was an emerging force and that, if somebody was willing to kind of step up and assume a leadership role, that they would have a lot of rope to either run with or hang themselves with. So that's me.
If you're having a hard time identifying the accent, is Irish. And I think what we're finding out is that the Irish school system is very, very strong. And it's produced a lot of great minds, and there's a lot of technology companies in Ireland now and taking advantage of it, aren't there?
Yeah, tons. Extremely vibrant entrepreneurial ecosystem. In some respects, obviously everybody heard about the Celtic Tiger in the late 90s and early aughties, and of course we had the big crash. But if anything, that's reinvigorated the entrepreneurial spirit in the Irish people, and they're starting up a lot of their own companies now instead of relying on large multinationals.
Yeah, my wife is a teacher, and she talks about Finland and she talks about Ireland, and says these are really good examples. Smaller countries that can have a lot more tight control over the education, and look at Finland, great results too. So I think that's a great story, and I'm glad they snagged you, because this is a very, very serious problem we have. And what we're going to talk about today is just in general healthcare IT, talk about what CMS does, what projects you're involved in, maybe some releases of information. There are a couple of fun events coming up. One is called the Datapalooza. There's an event before that, so there's a whole lot to talk about here, Niall. So let's talk about the Datapalooza. I just brought it up. Tell me what it is, and so the listeners know what this whole silly thing is. Rock and roll bands, or what is it?
So the Datapalooza, it has a little bit of everything. I like to call it the nerd prom because it's a gathering of, 1,500 or 2,000 people who are from all over the country who are truly passionate about data, health data in particular, and leveraging health data for common good. Although obviously, you know, there are a lot of entrepreneurial folks who think that by improving the healthcare system, they can also, you know, make some money along the way. So it started at 3 or 4 years ago under the stewardship of Todd Park when he was the chief technology officer of HHS. It's gone from strength to strength. I mean, obviously the story that everybody likes to tell is that, you know, there were 50 or 75 people at the first Datapalooza, and it's one of those things. If everybody who claimed they were at the first Datapalooza, there actually would have been
fill a stadium, yeah.
would have filled the stadium, but there were only 50 or 75 people. So it's from June 1st to the 3rd this year. I think the event is really
near a metro.
It's near a metro, Woodley Park Metro. It's really entering a stabilization phase. I'm pretty sure there's still you know, an opportunity for people to sign up if they want to, but there's tons and tons of user exhibits and demos and just like people doing things with data that you wouldn't think were even possible.
And if you have a nice three-piece suit and tie and toe cap lace-up shiny shoes, the environment's pretty loose. Loose is very loose and flexible, and people literally sitting on the floor with notebooks talking to each other, going back and forth and trying this out, and there's Niall Brennan, oh, what does he know? It's almost like college atmosphere, I think. It's very collegial.
Definitely. It's very collegial. It's very collaborative. It's a huge networking opportunity. It's a huge learning opportunity. Just some like fantastic keynotes. Atul Gawande, Secretary Burwell, Andy Slavitt, the acting administrator of CMS. So
I've heard so many good things about Atul. I love to have him in the studio. I mean, just people out of the blue. Oh, yeah. I've heard people in nothing to do with healthcare IT talking about him.
Yes.
And he has a very strong ability to communicate, is what I've been told. He's engaging.
A truly gifted orator and writer. It's astonishing what he can do with words.
Truth in Advertising here. I teach at Georgetown, and I have graduate students, and they have taken projects over to Datapalooza, set up little booths, and I had one student, they got an offer from a company, and they bought the product from them.
Excellent.
Right, there's A, B, and C. I had Todd Parker in the studio a few years back, told my students, they said, I'm working on an app, because you can work on an app and it's not that hard, you just have to be clever, and they sold it.
Yeah.
And so there's a story. I mean, there's a Georgetown connection here. So it's not like, oh, yeah, you got to have a PhD from MIT and you got to have this and big brain set. No, which you have to be very original and creative. And you know, the technology set is good, but creative, original, and think from a different perspective, maybe not from the suit and tie perspective. And this app this young man came up with, I was astonished. And so there's a testimony. I mean, it works. I mean, it is a way to take and so the challenge the government has is how can we bring in creative young minds to solve these problems? And so if it was Todd or whoever got together and said, well, maybe we can have this informal event and have everyone come together with small teams. And anticipating that event, what you folks have done is you've released the dogs, huh?
Mm-hmm. We've been pretty busy from a data release perspective over the past couple of years. Obviously, we had the hospital charge data that we released for the first time a couple of years ago. I think it had a really visceral reaction that was huge pickup from, you know, people in the street, media organizations. I think people were extremely surprised to see the massive, massive variation in hospital charges for the same procedure in the same city. So, you know, what I usually like to say about the hospital charge data is John Stewart on The Daily Show called it a miracle of competence in government. So that's good enough for me. Yeah. I can sort of retire happy.
I was thinking you weren't letting the dogs out. What you were doing is you were releasing the meat and then you'd say, okay, let the dogs come and get it. And that's what you're releasing the meat and the dogs came to get it. And that's what it is. It's data. And here you can do whatever you want with it. You
know? Exactly. And that is one of our primary motivations is to release this and have it be an accelerant. We're the enabler and the data is the accelerant for entrepreneurs and other folks to use it. We followed that up last year with releasing 10 million lines of data on how physicians practice in Medicare, so you could individually identify physicians and the services they were providing to Medicare beneficiaries. And then just 2 weeks ago, we did the same with prescription drug treatment patterns of physicians in Medicare. So now we're at a stage where over the past couple of years, we've gone from a situation where there was very little objective utilization information or like, you know, peeling back the onion on how physicians practice. And now there is a ton of information out there, admittedly just for Medicare, but it's better than nothing.
Well, it's a good start. It's a good sampling. And that's what a statistician will tell you. It all starts with a valid sample. And this is a valid sample. You can move from there. Let's take a break and come back. talk more about CMS, some of your challenges there, you know, the data pollutes we mentioned already. I think an interesting topic would be hiring good people and hiring data scientists and how to do it and what challenges not only the government has, but regular commercial companies have too. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Niall Brennan, Chief Data Officer, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The gentleman with the mellifluous voice is Niall Brennan. He's Chief Data Officer, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS. He is right in the midst of a big battle. He's kind of like the perfect storm where you have big data and mobile and, oh, by the way, a new government program. And it's like a washing machine or something. Maybe it is a perfect storm. And he's right in the middle of it. And he's trying to solve some problems. And he's been involved in data pollutes. So we talked about that in the first part of this interview. And there's something that goes on before the data pollutes. What's that called?
So there's a DocRoth event. They basically get a bunch of hackers together the day before the Palooza. It's been organized by Fred Trotter and the folks at DocGraph. There's been a great emergence in the past couple of years of, I would say, also activist data liberators, whether they be investigative journalists or entrepreneurs like Fred. And they've been very aggressively utilizing FOIA mechanisms to get all kinds of interesting data out that we're not releasing through our normal public use channels. So Fred has received a lot of physician referral data from us over the years that kind of show how physicians do business with each other and how patients travel from physician to physician. So they're going to have a great event downtown. It's at 1776. I don't know if you heard of it.
Right,
it's
across kind
of
the Washington Post, 15th Street.
Big incubator space downtown. Yeah. So there's going to be all kinds of different activity
Another
there.
Another casual, informal place too. Yeah.
Very much so.
And that's DocGraph. And the Twitter handle is at DocGraph. And if you want to be old-fashioned and go to a website, you can go to docgraph.org for more information. It's almost like Data Plutz is now kind of like a hub where there's a spinoff event here and a spinoff event there. And it just seems
becoming
like it's
like South by Southwest. It'll be like a two-week event before long.
Wait a minute. This is just a few people, a bunch of nerds getting together and coming up with some code. That's kind of fascinating. I have had guests on the studio here talking about copy data management, talking about containers, talking about Amazon, talking about the private and public cloud and security. And oh my goodness, I think I've sliced and diced this every conceivable way. So from your perspective, I'm dying to ask someone like you this question. From data visualization, I mean, you encounter a lot of situations with data where you're trying to visualize and see how it works. What are the good tools that you use from the perspective of my listeners? What should they consider? What would be good for a federal government, you know, information technology professional to look at to understand some of this data?
Great question, John. And you know, we're huge believers in data visualization in my shop at CMS. We really do believe that a picture can tell 1,000 words, but you have to paint that picture extremely carefully. We're actually not using, you know, super duper fancy or hard to find stuff. It's, you know, the regular, you know, data visualization tools in Excel or PowerPoint. We do use MicroStrategy. We've got some pretty cool dashboards out there on the web that people can check out. And whatever the built-in functionality is to SAS, we use a lot of mapping and heat mapping so we can, you know, target specific interventions or let folks at the department know, you know, what are the areas where readmissions are, you know, going up, where readmissions going down, different things like that.
Mm. Do you work with the folks at the Idea Lab?
I do very, very closely. Love the Idea Lab. In fact, I hired a HHS entrepreneur, Mark Scrimshire.
No kidding.
And he's working with me on the Medicare Blue Button program and sort of bringing that from a very beta 1.0-ish stage to a more mature 2.0-ish stage.
This is almost
stage.
Like the White House's little entrepreneur program, isn't it?
And so absolutely.
What's the job title again? It's HHS entrepreneur?
He's a HHS entrepreneur in residence. And
wow.
He's doing a fantastic job. He's working all across the agency. He's working closely with the Idea Lab. He's working closely with ONC. He regularly uses many terms that I nod politely and pretend to understand. But he's gotten great traction, and we're very hopeful that we can really take the Blue Button program to interesting places.
One of my topics I want to talk about is hiring data scientists. is like hunting unicorns. And you snagged someone good there, huh? I mean,
yeah.
What was the approach? Ad in the newspaper, skywriting, or...
You know, we're lucky in that the Entrepreneur in Residence program is a pretty prestigious, year-long fellowship.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of applications. The department works pretty hard at getting the right people in. And it's an informal network. You know, people do it. They like it. They tell their friends who they think would be similar. But you're right. Finding good data scientists in this, you know, market where data science talent comes at a considerable premium is very difficult.
Now, your advantages, I have three kids that are millennials. Now, a millennial will look down their nose at a car, will look down their nose if you have a plastic, maybe even throw something at you, have a plastic bottle. But if you can position yourself as, look, we're confused, we have a lot of data, we're trying to help people understand this data to help save lives. Wow. From a millennial perspective, that would be the magnet. That would be the draw, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it really is, in some respects, a pretty easy sell because of the incredible impact that we have. I mean, we directly or indirectly cover over 120 million people. We're 20% of the U.S. economy. The opportunity to have a lasting impact that, you know, really positively affects the everyday lives of American people. I mean, that's pretty hard to say no to.
Well, for example, my daughter has a friend who's just admitted to medical school. He postponed it for 1 year because he didn't like the ethics of the people at his internship. So these people at the internship had this really bright young man who could really accomplish a lot of things. They were doing some shady things. He said, I don't know if I want to get involved. I want to back off a little bit. But that, I think that is, I'm a lot older than you, but I think this generation, they have this stronger moral compass, I'd say, and that's where he backed off. But I said, yeah, but Phil, you can make a lot of money. He said, well, so what? I mean, isn't that the
yeah.
story? That's crazy, but I think that's the way to attract it. And the story is a great story, you're not going to help two or three people. You can help 125 million people.
Yeah.
And as long as they can see that down the road, that's something. I have had people in the studio use these two words together, which are kind of funny, called predictive analytics. And I guess soothsayers did predictive analytics back in the days of ancient Greece. I'm sure you study that in Ireland. A lot of Americans don't study ancient Greece, but they weren't called data scientists. They're called soothsayers or maybe Oracle of the Potomac. So tell me about predictive analytics and the big data. Is that really pushing the meaning of those two words, or is this educated guess? Or, I mean, predictive analytics, hey, I'll pay a lot for predictive analytics. How about an educated guess? No, I'm not paying anything for that. Where does that fit in?
So, on the topic of data scientists, I do think it's funny you related them to soothsayers. There's a joke doing the rounds, what's a data scientist? It's a SaaS programmer who lives in San Francisco. So I think predictive modeling is great and holds a lot of promise. We're doing a fair bit of it at CMS, particularly around the fraud, waste, and abuse side of the house, because obviously you want to catch fraud, you know, essentially before it happens. Otherwise, if you end up in a pay and chase model, it gets increasingly difficult to recover that money. Yeah. I also subscribe to the theory, though, that before you can predict the future, you have to understand the present fully. And, you know, most predictive models are, you know, based on what we've observed over time. And so in other aspects of our business, I think we're focused more on understanding the present fully before we can, you know, properly and professionally apply predictive modeling techniques.
So when you sit down with your boss or a group of people that are trying to achieve agency objectives here, one area of your responsibility is opening up data like you've done here. Are there future doorways, gaps you can open up in the next 6-8 months? Where are the next 3 or 4 clobs of information going to be released?
So, I mean, as I said earlier, we've been very busy in releasing different types of data. I can't really get into too many specifics, but, you know, not to make it all about the data palooza again, we're definitely going to announce some interesting things at the Data Palooza that I think will...
In the radio world, that's called a tease.
Well, I'm going to keep teasing.
Up soon, Bryce Harper might be in the studio.
that will make people very, very happy. And then I think in addition to all the open data work, I mean, it is the Office of Enterprise Data and Analytics. And there's a lot of work that we do that people don't see. Internal analytics, making sure that the administrator and the secretary have the numbers and data that they need to understand how the programs are running and how all the, interventions that we have going right now are affecting those programs.
That's like juggling five or six things. I couldn't imagine juggling even two of those things. Let's take a break and come back. I'd like to talk about transparency and some confusion involved in that word. It's a tough one. And storing all this information, some of the challenges and the costs of storing, especially with Internet of Things coming up in the scene and all kinds of medical devices and sensors, and how much information to store, how much is it worth, where to store it, how to store it. It gets to be very difficult just in and of itself. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Niall Brennan, Chief Data Officer, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Niall Brennan, Chief Data Officer, CMS, and we're talking about big data and chief data and mixing data and understanding data and all kinds of concepts, especially involved with healthcare IT. Before the break, I was kind of talking about a couple odds and ends. And yesterday, I sat down with the CEO of a local company, and a small company, 30 people, very successful. And he is completely transparent. Everyone in the company knows what everyone else makes. They see quarterly P&L statements. And if you're there a day, you see the quarterly P&L statement. You know exactly what's going on. Completely transparent. Now, this is a for-profit company in Northern Virginia. And he thinks that he's not going to get good people unless they understand exactly everyone's role. Now, that's a nice ideal world. Now, when it comes to transparency and healthcare data, whoa, these are way different rules. I mean, these are very, very, these are called lawsuits. I mean, you can get, you know, so your boss comes up to you and says, look, big guy, we got to release X, Y, and Z. And you go, whoa, I'm all for transparency, but there's a whole filter. I think this has got to be a debating society at CMS, just what to release.
It's definitely a great question, John, and I think transparency means different things to different people. I think, you know, specific to your question about healthcare data, there's no doubt that I'm a huge advocate internally for transparency. But, you know, the overarching any decision to release any data is the fact that beneficiary privacy is a sacred
That's
trust
hard.
That we, you know, never, ever compromise our efforts on. So even all the releases that I've talked about earlier in the show, we take extreme care to de-identify, suppress small cell sizes, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, and you have to do that, right? Because it's completely publicly available data. And, you know, you need to take those precautions. Now, we have other more controlled methods of data access, where we can have some more granular information that can allow people to do more detailed analysis. But they're, you know, passing all kinds of data security tests and IRB reviews. Everything's HIPAA compliant, but that allows them to do more advanced analysis that, you know, is not permitted than with the data that we release publicly.
How can you project out 12 months what kind of data you're going to look at and release? I mean, there's stuff being the Apple Watch, I'll throw that out there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you plan the next 12 months. Okay, second quarter next year, we're going to do X, Y, and Z. All of a sudden, a monkey wrench gets thrown in with an Apple Watch, and you have all these new data sets that are in there. Do you read them in pencil? I mean, this is a very loose and flexible approach. I mean, you're not sitting there saying, okay, we're going to cast it in stone, and you almost have to say, well, you know, we're thinking about fixing to get ready for probably the next 6 months. We're going to do this depending on X, Y, and Z. This is loose.
Yeah, it's definitely very loose, and we try to be as flexible as possible. I mean, I think, you know, with the Internet of Things and the advent of wearables and different things like that, I mean, it's just going to add to the what is already a tsunami of data. I'm personally pretty excited about the iWatch. My wife has already, you know, ordered hers, and she's
wow.
She's raring to go. The Fitbit was consigned immediately to the trash can once news of
the
iWatch came out. So, you know, I think we just we kind of take things on a day by day approach. It's actually, you know, a kind of a good approach to take at a large agency where, you know, so many different things are going on. But, you know, we have a pretty ambitious agenda. We want to try and get as much stuff out there as possible.
So if people want to follow you on Twitter, what's your Twitter handle?
N_Brennan.
B-R-E-N-N-A-N.
You will get all kinds of pithy observations about Manchester United and different things like that. Occasionally health data.
This is also a podcast, by the way. So you can listen to this at iTunes. You type in Federal Tech Talk Podcast and you can subscribe and listen to past shows and future shows, or when you're driving down the baseball game, you can listen to this interview or whatever. You know, it's interesting that podcasts now are supposed to be as long as the typical commute is in your area. Mm-hmm. And so if it's a half hour, you make your podcast a half hour or 20 minutes. It's kind of a funny thing. So we just started doing that at the beginning of the year, and I think more and more people are going to take advantage of topically listening to podcasts that they have a whole lot of interest in. I have a lot of interest in the whole concept of data curation. I've done so many shows on copy data management, and okay, we have this data set here, and oh, by the way, we have another. And which is the gold copy is the question. And I would think juggling all this, just first of all, amount of information, and then rapidly changing information with increasing sensitivity. I think this is a task in of itself of data curation. Okay. What box to put this in, or is this a duplicate box?
Yeah, it's a great question, John. So, I mean, data stewardship and data governance are really key to a lot of what we do at CMS and have been key behind our success, you know, ensuring that there is adequate documentation, kind of a single source of truth, and really, you know, driving the process through a strong data governance approach. I think the dirty secret is data governance is actually, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, big data is so glamorous and, you know, the sexiest job of the 21st century and predictive modeling this and that and the other. None of that happens without the relatively unglamorous work of data governance, like, you know, getting your policies written down, documenting everything, ensuring that there are people willing to raise their hand and say, yes, I will be accountable for the quality around this variable or this data set. And so it's an ongoing process, but we've made a lot of progress over the last couple of years.
I was at a conference last year. I was a moderator all day long, and at lunch, I waited in the audience, talked to a bunch of people, and there was a question I asked. I said, well, why are you here? He says, well, because we have all this stuff, and we try to make sense of it. And there were 25, 26-year-old gentlemen and kids, and I said, well, what's your job? And they said, well, right now we're at the point of lining things up and make sure it's and use the word poured into the right areas.
Yeah.
And so there are a lot of, in baseball, if we talk baseball, it's small ball. It's a little hit here, sacrifice fly, a little hit there, a little grounder, move the runner along, and almost like the way they play ball in Japan, I think. But there's a lot more to it than a pie graph in the Washington Post with 22% of X, Y, or Z. And so I think that's a... I think the non-glamorous part is curious because it's detail oriented.
Yes.
Tell me about sharing data and data sets. Are there data sets that are just shared with certain communities? Data sets that are open? It's almost like a private and public and hybrid cloud. Are there certain data sets available to some people, not some people, to the general public? How is that all distributed?
Definitely. We have our data that goes out to absolutely everybody. And then we have what we call research identifiable files and limited data sets. And so research identifiable files are highly, highly controlled access, fair bit of paperwork. Everybody has to, sign a data use agreement and, significant penalties in the data use agreement associated with misuse of the data. The reward at the end of all that is some very, granular, powerful data that researchers have used for many years to calculate, geographic variation, hospital readmissions, harm that's, patient harm that's caused in hospitals. And we're using that data and tracking it now to see that a lot of those trends are starting to trend in a more positive direction. Readmissions are down, hospital-acquired conditions are down. The other type of data set is limited data sets. They also require a data use agreement, but are partially de-identified. So they're a little bit easier to get your hands on and also a little bit cheaper.
And you've got to sign a piece of paper, yeah. I never thought of that. So that's a differentiator. So
yeah.
What would be a typical organization? Would a university research organization?
So for the research identifiable files, are pretty exclusively used by universities, Michigan, Dartmouth, and we fulfill a lot of research identifiable file requests every year. I think probably 500 requests a year, totaling over, 2,000 or 3,000 files and millions of lines of data. Limited data sets, much more open. News organizations, private companies, researchers, anybody who has the, facility and interest and the willingness to pay the relatively nominal purchase price of the data.
You said millions of lines of data.
Oh, yeah, maybe possibly billions. So
I don't know if I want to dive into that. That just seems seems pretty complicated. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about maybe Dataplutza. We'll give you my little test to see if you're a card-carrying nerd and look about the future of healthcare IT for the federal government. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, Neil Brennan, Chief Data Officer, CMS. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Across the studio from me is Niall Brennan, Chief Data Officer at CMS. We're talking about big data, healthcare analytics, storing data, data curation, all kinds of problems and options and opportunities. And if you're listening to this and want to get involved, you can go to the Dataplutza. That's just around the corner, isn't it?
Exactly. June 1st to 3rd.
Dataplooza. I'm sure if you just type in healthcare Dataplutza, you'll stumble on the site. And I think there's a group that's running it. And you go up there. And I went and I just looked at the booths. I went around and said, well, I never thought of doing that. And that's the advantage of that is that some little kid from Michigan comes in with a different way. Oh, I never thought, why would you do it that way? And all of a sudden, it's completely simple to an outsider.
Exactly.
That's great.
That's great.
Well, what I normally do to every one of my guests is I give them a scientific 10-question test to see if they're a card-carrying nerd, whether they're Irish or not Irish. And so I have the questions here. Are you ready, young man?
I'm ready.
Okay. Number one, do you have an Instagram account?
Yes.
How many cell phones have you purchased for yourself in the last year?
One.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
Yes.
Yeah, we know that. Have you ever used Meerkat or Periscope?
I have not.
What kind of smartphone do you have?
iPhone 6.
iPhone 6. What's the most popular app on that bad boy?
Most popular app is probably either the Twitter app or my Strava app that I use to track my bike rides.
Strava?
Strava.
Oh, that's good. And we break into your house. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
At least 10.
10? 10? That's off the chart.
I mean,
you can't
you've
say
got
10.
The old iPads, the new iPads, the iPad minis, the Kindles.
I never thought, what are all the iPad thieves in town going to circle your address? 10, wow. And for the old ones, hey, take the old ones. Who cares? When was your most recent post in social media networks?
About... Two minutes ago when I posted a picture of you on my Twitter feed.
That's going to break some cameras. And do you have on your person a mobile fitness device?
I view my iPhone as a mobile fitness device.
Oh, getting arrogant here, huh? Last book you read, was it electronic or paper?
I don't read electronic books. I'm a Luddite when it comes to books. I like paper books.
You were trending to being a nerd. You're really trending to be a nerd, but you know.
I like to turn that paper page.
We had Todd and Brian in here and I gave them the test and they were so close, they decided to go out in the hallway and wrestle.
Who won?
Well, between those two guys, it wasn't much of a contest, you know. It was like two 18-month-old kids wrestling. Not that they're not physically imposing.
You said it, not me.
But they're wonderful gentlemen, but you know, probably not somebody wouldn't have protect you in an Irish bar, I'd say. Not one of those two. Maybe in an Irish debate, but not an Irish bar. You have seen a lot. You've seen a lot from the private perspective. You've seen, you know, Capitol Hill. You've been here. You've been there. You've been thrown into this fight. I don't know why they threw you in the middle of this fight, but somehow they must have thought you were smart enough to survive. So where's it heading? Where's it going to happen 5 or 10 years from now? They're going to iron all this out? Electronic health records are going to be smooth sailing? Everyone's going to have walk into hospital and have that EHR and bang, it's going to be there? To tell you the truth, it just seems like there's more problems than possible to be solved.
I think I'm more optimistic than you, John. I think if you look at where we were even 5 years ago and where we are today, we've made incredible progress. And, you know, we're definitely... at a time of incredible change in healthcare generally and in healthcare data in particular. And I think at times people get frustrated with the pace of change or see, you know, that interoperability isn't where they'd like it to be or different things like that. But I truly am optimistic that in the next 5 to 10 years, you know, many of those problems will go away. Data will flow seamlessly. Patients will be empowered. They will be leveraging their own data. They will be sharing it with others. Physicians will be routinely sharing data. Payers like CMS will be getting providers, you know, the data that they need at the right time in the right format to practice the best quality care. So I definitely remain optimistic.
No, I don't listen to Irish music. I listen to music from Cuba. And I like Cuba. And what's happening now, there's a lot of Afro Cuban fusion music that's coming together, and all these different sources and these different rhythms, and it's fascinating how different types of music can be combined to sound pleasant. But there's fusion involved in your world too. There's clinical program and administrative data sets that are trying to. So are they as similar to really like Afro-Cuban music, or is they complete difference? Is this like Irish music and then music from Japan or something? Are they closely associated?
Well, they're definitely closely associated. I think getting them combined on a wide scale is definitely the holy grail for people like me. There are some examples nationally where folks have done it. I think particularly Optum Labs have a pretty large data repository that I think has about combined claims and clinical data for about 40 or 50 million people. We'll certainly be combining the various electronic quality measures that we get from physicians through the high-tech payment incentive program with our claims data. But there's definitely, I think, that remains, kind of a relatively unexplored frontier. And it's going to be pretty exciting to dig into that.
When I think of frontiers, I think of cowboys and independent people. And does each agency have a different way they handle these claims? We go across the river to the VA. I mean, that's a whole different world. But is there a commonality there? Is there some kind of a shared experience or standards? I mean, is there a standard way to hold this data? I didn't want to shock you there, Neil.
Well, we always like to work as collaboratively as possible with our federal partners. I think for claims data, there are pretty widely accepted standards, UB92 and the like. And then on the electronic health record side, ONC and CMS have been pretty diligent about trying to roll out different standards. I think VA and DOD, they have their own electronic health record installations that, may or may not follow some of the standards that we've emerged. But I think also, as this industry sector stabilizes, you're just going to see more and more commonalities across the different systems.
Last Friday, I had dinner with a friend of mine who has spent the last 30 years working in the healthcare industry. He's a consultant, and he works as a temporary CIOs, and he evaluates information technology proposals. And he tells me in the commercial world, this company Epic is just a monster and it is total world domination. And so when I think of the commercial world and domination of two or three different big companies, I think of interoperability and I go, well, this is a whole separate, complete different battle. I mean, you may be able to control what's going on in the federal government, but what about the commercial world and interoperability with these commercial entities?
So obviously, as a federal employee, I'm vendor neutral. And with the high-tech incentive payment program, certainly there are some companies that have grabbed more market share than others. And we would hope that that's based on market dynamics. We're definitely very committed to greater interoperability. The Meaningful Use 3 rule shows that. If anybody listened to Andy Slavitt or Karen DeSalvo at the Big HIMSS conference in Chicago a couple of weeks ago, they made it abundantly clear that interoperability was one of our number one priorities, and that, if anything was standing away in the way of interoperability, then we needed to know about it so we could address it.
Abundantly clear. I flashed back to eighth grade. And my nun turned to me and said, did I make that abundantly clear to you, Mr. Gilroy? That does sound like a phrase out of the teacher would use. They made it abundantly clear. Did Karen get into the audience and start throwing things at people? Come here, big guy. Shake him up and go, do you understand me? That's really what she almost has to do, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure they adopted the nun and brother method of communication.
I'm making it abundantly clear. What makes me abundantly clear to you, buddy? You show up late for class again and you'll be thrown through the window.
I also had many things made abundantly clear to me when I was a child at school in Ireland.
Yeah, but on the other hand, you have a good analytical mind now and you can organize details, and there's something to be said for that. You could have gone down different roads, let's just say. Huh?
Exactly.
Great. Well, the road we're going to go down is we're going to have to sign off here. I'd like to thank my guest. If you want to have more information, you can go to docgraph. You can go to Datapalooza. You can follow Niall, learn about the nationals and learn about soccer and learn about all kinds of fun events and that he attends and whatnot. And I think we're running out of time, but you know, this is just an evergreen topic. The whole idea of the Internet of Things and healthcare technology and sensors, it just is a loose and flexible subject, and it's going to change so much in the next 3 or 4 years. I don't know where it's going to head, and I guess I'm old-fashioned and scared to see where it's going to head, but I'm going to be there. We'll both be there and see what happens. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Niall Brennan, Chief Data Officer, CMS. Thank you, Niall.
Thanks, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you miss any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.